League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This is ESPN 97.5, brought to you by Zadok Jewelers.
It's pretty dope.
The absolute best choice.
KFNC, Mont Belvieu, Houston.
Hi, I'm Carly Lloyd, and you're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN.
El club necesita cambios de todo tipo.
The team needs changes of all
bueno,
types.
Ya no es como te digo antes, ¿no? Ni la primera, ni la segunda, ni la tercera vez. Creo que nadie es
imprescindible. It's not the first, second, or third time.
Yo el primero me ofrezco en que si hay que venir sangre nueva pues, y cambiar esta dinámica, pues
things to change the dynamic.
En irme, en dejarlo.
He would be porque, the first to go.
Porque creo que ahora sí hemos tocado fondo.
We've hit rock bottom.
Time now for the La Liga update.
Leo Messi golpea contra.
Cristiano del área, sigue Cristiano.
¡Gol! On Soccer Matters, here's Glenn Davis.
By the way, that soundbite was Gerard Piqué saying, "We hit rock bottom." This La Liga update brought to you by Lustav Vermouth. Get a little Spain in your life. Lustav Vermouth is fun, whether over ice with tonic water or club soda, or my favorite, paired with my favorite gin, and a gin and tonic with an orange peel. You break it, you get the essence of the orange, few drops of lime, and there you have it. Lustav Vermouth, so refreshing, either on its own or in a gin and tonic. Ask for it at your local liquor store. They bring us tonight, Lustav Vermouth, Jordi Sunyer of TV1 in Barcelona, Spain, talking the Barcelona crisis.
Jordi, the first thing I guess we would like to know is what's the fallout in Barcelona? The mood in the city, what's going on in Barcelona after this humiliating defeat to Bayern Munich?
First of all, thanks for having me on, Glenn. As you can imagine, there's a lot of nervousness here in Barcelona. I wouldn't call it sadness because when things aren't working, Barcelona fans, Catalan people tend to want to burn everything. As we say here, to make a new fire, to make a bonfire with everything that's wrong. And that's the feeling here. Many things are happening. There's the need to change everything, that's for sure, because for 3 or 4 years, there have been signs that there was something that wasn't working. You had to receive 8 goals by Bayern Munich to clearly show that Barcelona wasn't working well, the club wasn't working well, the team wasn't working well. So this is the feeling that everything needs to be changed. Ronald Koeman will be the new coach. Let's see if he can change many things in the club.
So Ronald Koeman's going to come in. Kiki Setien right away was rolled out. I mean, there was probably a statement that needed to be made. Look, if we're being honest, this is not just about Setien. This is about Josep Maria Bartomeu. It's about Ramon Planas, the sporting director. It's about Eric Abidal. It seems to me, everything I'm reading, they're positioning this as it's simply about the team, and it's not about the infrastructure of the club and those guys. Are they self-preservationists? Or are they protecting themselves?
That's it. That's a very good analysis by you, Glenn. The thing is, the director's board these days, of course, they have all the communications power, let's say, like that, In Barcelona. They restrict journalists from getting information. They have several media outlets which don't depend on the club, but are friendly to the director's board, who get all the news and all the messages that the director's board want to transmit to the members of the club, to the fans. But the thing is, for example, once you have a situation as important as the one we are living these days, you sack the coach, Quique Setién. You cannot communicate that only with a statement. You need the president to give an explanation. this Tuesday, there will be an interview from Josep Maria Bartomeu with several media directors from the three main sports newspapers in Barcelona. This interview will be broadcast by Barça TV, the TV channel of FC Barcelona. But we needed answers, not on Tuesday, on Sunday we needed answers, on Monday we needed answers, and the club communicates only via statements. So there's this spirit of self-preservation, as you say, because what they will try to communicate and what they will try to sell from now on, I think, is to divert the guilt of what is happening these days to the players. It's true that Barcelona has a squad of aging players. Busquets, more than 30 years old, Jordi Alba, Gerard Piqué, Leo Messi, Ivan Rakitic. But is it all the players' fault? No. There's a sporting area, as you said, with Eric Abidal as a sporting director and Ramon Planas as his assistant, who have allowed all these players to sign new contracts until 2024, for example, as the case of Jordi Alba. For example, do you think how he has performed this season, Jordi Alba will be still a world-class player in 2024 when he's 35 and he will be still in contract with FC Barcelona? This is a true madness. It's impossible. This is not the responsibility of the players. The players, it's very ironic. I suppose you wouldn't ever think to publicly ask for the resignation of, let's say, ESPN's chief executive officer. You wouldn't. It would be mad. But that's what Barcelona players have made these days and this season. We've heard Gerard Piqué, for example, asking for changes in the club at all levels, even at the director's board. Is it a worker, even if he's a very well-paid worker, is he entitled to ask for the removal of his boss? It's truly mad. But these players have benefited from that all these last years. They have signed these contracts, even maybe knowing that they wouldn't be able to play at their best at 2022, 2023. And they did it. And now they complain about how that the director's board has run the club. It's a very complicated situation, but there are several things in this situation which are really surreal. But well, it had to happen one day, and the shame, the pity. It's what I said before, that you had to get a goal from Bayern Munich to expose all these miseries in Barcelona.
Simply remarkable, Jordi. Jordi Sunyer of TV3 in Spain, in Barcelona. We're getting it on the ground from him. Okay, so what I just heard you say is pretty incredible. Here is you know, the sporting director, the club president, and everybody have signed a ton of bad contracts, essentially, paying guys well beyond their shelf life. And we've seen this happen in football a lot. On the other hand, the players who have signed these contracts and have taken them, which most players are going to do, let's face it, they've taken the contracts. They're now throwing it back at the president and the staff. So, you know, you got a real divisive thing going on here. Is Koeman a guy that can bring this all together?
He did it in Valencia when he was coach of Valencia in 2007, 2008. The first thing he did was keeping out of the team several veteran players who he thought were a problem for the dressing room, for the behavior in general of the dressing room in Valencia. He kept apart Albelda, Cañizares, and Angulo, which were Valencia legends at that moment. He won the Copa del Rey, but at the same time, Valencia that season under Ronald Koeman was looming with relegation. They had relegation really, really near. He was sacked after a 5-1 defeat at the Athletic Club Bilbao. And after Ronald Koeman got the sack at Valencia, he was absolutely lambasted by his former players. For example, Joaquin publicly told that they had very serious problems with Koeman at the Valencia dressing room. What I want to say with that, it's clear that Barcelona has to release some of his stars of the past years. In fact, the club has already leaked that except for Messi, Marc-André Ter Stegen, and Frenkie de Jong, all the other players are for sale. That means Sergio Busquets, that means Jordi Alba, that means Luis Suarez, that means Nelson Semedo, that means even Clément Lenglet, which has performed really well in his seasons at Barcelona. Everyone is for sale. But
Rakitic in there, Rakitic, of course, all those guys.
Yeah, Rakitic was for sale last season already, but he didn't want to leave Barcelona because he feels very well in the city. But the thing is, once you clean the dressing room, what do you do with that? How do you leave the ambience in that dressing room? Even if you want to keep Messi, if you keep Messi without all his guards, let's say, or all his friends, his close friends at the dressing room, the players who have set the tone in the dressing room last years, how can you rebuild a good spirit, a good ambience in that dressing room? It's not that easy. And Ronald Koeman had problems in Valencia with that. I think they wanted a coach. That's because they spoke about Mauricio Pochettino also, because he did that at Espanyol. He had very clear that he had to release all the players that could be harmful for the dressing room ambience. Ronald Koeman can do that, but I can't say if he will be successful in that, because the power that FC Barcelona players have and the board of directors have allowed players to get all this power and to think they are absolutely powerful to do everything they want, it will be very difficult. That's why there's this feeling among FC Barcelona fans that everything has to burn. And practically, FC Barcelona has to build a new team from scratch, from only 2-3 players that can assure the transition. But every other thing is rotten. And you have to really change all the team and rebuild. I saw some weeks ago The Last Dance, the Netflix documentary about the Chicago Bulls. That's that rebuilding, that transition, and that mentality of letting the people know, hey, that's over. That's really over. We have to start from scratch. We have to accept that next season, it will be a transition season, and that we have to rebuild everything. Can Koeman do that without falling to the pressure of the media, of the fans accustomed to winning silverware? It's the first season in last 12 seasons that Barcelona hasn't won anything. Last season with was 2007-2008 with Frank Rijkaard. Many question marks around this one. I think he can be a good coach. He's not Johan Cruyff. Ronald Koeman is not
an extension of Cruyff, and that's what people like, right? Plus, he scored a goal in the European Cup to win it in 92. Is that something that makes people comfortable, his history with Barcelona and Cruyff?
That's the problem, Glenn, because you have brought with Ronald Koeman a popular figure in Barcelona. That's for sure. First Champions League for Barcelona was thanks to a goal by Ronald Koeman at Wembley against Sampdoria. But if you look at the style of play of Ronald Koeman's teams,
yes,
he's not Cruyff. He's not an orthodox of the Barca ADN. He's more versatile. He adapts to what he has in every team. He's more practical. But let me say one thing. I prefer that. For example, if Ronald Koeman is unveiled this Wednesday, it seems it will be this Wednesday. He will be introduced as the new coach of Barcelona. If I were Ronald Koeman at the first press conference, I would tell the truth. Hey, I'm not Johan Cruyff.
Yeah.
Because Quique Setién did that. I'm a Cruyff fan. I always admired his style of play. I always.
So he basically gets a job and he tells them what they want to hear, which is basically,
yeah,
I'm a big fan of Cruyff. And you're saying that Koeman gets the job. He's got to just say, look, I'm not Johan Cruyff. No one is. And this is where we're going. All right. We're talking to Jordi Sunyer. We're talking to Jordi Sunyer of TV3. I just want to make sure people know that we've got you, Jordi. And again, we're so thankful to get this straight from you in Barcelona. All right, so let me go back to this. If you're going to try to do sweeping changes in the time of COVID-19, this is expensive to do. And this is also a club that you've told me has tremendous debt now that's become even more evident because of COVID. So is it really possible to make wholesale changes with players?
Barca needs to sell. It's very difficult because, as you said, COVID has had an impact on Barcelona economic situation. Before buying, you have to sell. That's compulsory because if Barcelona board hasn't resigned, it's because they want to try to solve the situation before leaving, because Barcelona are in dire straits right now in their economic situation. So that's why they need to sell so many players. But this is very dangerous because they publicly have made known that they need to sell, that the COVID impact on Barcelona has been huge, that they lost 200 million euros in revenue. So in football market, when you know that another club needs to sell a player, you automatically try to get a lower price tag for that player. So that's dangerous for Barcelona because they need money. And without that money, they cannot buy. They want Lautaro Martinez. Okay, from the first day, we know about the interest of Barcelona in Lautaro Martinez. The sporting area told us, we are optimistical. Player wants to come. We think it will be long, a long negotiation, but it will be possible. Inter wants 110 million euros for Lautaro Martinez, or a lower amount with a player. They won't lower the price tag. Barcelona has not the money to buy a player like Lautaro Martinez. How can you rebuild the team if you had if you haven't got the money to sign great players from abroad? That's a very difficult sporting situation. But on the other side, that can force Barcelona to revive La Masia. Fortunately, there are two great prospects.
Hold that thought, Jordi, because before we get into La Masia, I want to get into that a little deeper. I want to ask you the obvious question, and dare I even say this. Would Barcelona be better off with Lionel Messi moving on now, based on the fact that he's 33 years old and you're trying to start a whole new sort of Barca under Koeman?
That's a very hot debate right now here in Barcelona, this one, Glenn, because there are people who think that Lionel Messi has to play for Barcelona still, let's say, one more year, two more years. You know that the news spread last Sunday by Brazilian journalist Marcelo Beckler, who's been living in Barcelona for several years, where that Messi wanted to live right now. But if you have to perform a smooth transition, maybe it's better than Leo Messi's taste. 1 year, 2 year to help smoothen this transition to a new team. But at the same time, this information is clearly a leak by Leo Messi's entourage. It's very difficult to get Leo Messi speaking publicly about anything related to the director's board or the running of the club. He did it twice this season, and it's very rare. Normally, Leo Messi's strategy and his entourage's strategy, it's this one. They leak an information to selected media outlets who spread it, and obviously everyone repeats this information. And that's like playing poker. You have that card, you play that card, you force the other player to respond. This news is either you live or I live. I think that's the message that Messi wanted to make known with this information last Sunday.
That's to Bartomeu. Either Bartomeu leaves or he does.
Yeah. That's it. Either you leave or I leave. But as I said before, would you allow a worker, even if it's Leo Messi, the best player we have seen, maybe the best player in the world, can Leo Messi exert such an influence with the running of the club? Barcelona will live without Leo Messi and hasn't lived without has lived, sorry, without Leo Messi in past years? Has, even with everything that, that he has done, has he the right to exert a severe influence of in the future of the club? That these are the two sides of the debate, and it's difficult to say because there are inputs that are good on one side and good on the other. Everyone is right. Messi, I think, can't do that, but I think Messi is necessary to ensure a good transition. So it's a very interesting debate.
Interesting one. Jordi Sunyer, TB3 in Spain, joining us from Barcelona. This is an incredible discussion here, talking about Barcelona's situation, Lionel Messi.
So that's part one. We're going to come back with part two, brought to you by Lustav Vermouth with Jordi Sunyer of TB3 in Barcelona, Spain. Fascinating stuff. Real estate agents, you tired of paying high commission splits to your broker? At NB Elite Realty, you get 100% of your hard-earned commission at closing, plus we offer low transaction fees, free investment training, exceptional support, and no hidden fees. Visit the website, nbeliterealty.com, or call 844-444-NBER for more information on how to join our winning team. Don't wait. Start your journey to financial freedom today with NB Elite Realty, nbeliterealty.com. That's former Houston hotshot, Nebo Bandovic. Part two coming up.
I'm in my 20s. I'm the future.
More talk, less commercials. Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5.
We are here for you. La, 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 la.
I'm Tyler Adams, and you are listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis on ESPN 97.5.
Thomas Muller thought about the body, gets it back from Lewandowski, and Bayern Munich lead. It's Thomas Muller. Just over 3 minutes played. Here's Gnabry, and now Perisic. It's in, and Bayern lead again.
So that's the Lustav Vermouth interview here with Jordi Sunyer. We've done part one. That's the 8-2 demolition by Bayern Munich of Barcelona, and we're discussing that now. Let's go to part two now with Jordi Sunyer, brought to you by Lustav Vermouth.
Has Messi been as good of a leader? You know, we always get these comparisons, you know, when it comes to Argentina, that Maradona would have kept fighting and, you know, pushing the players. This is why Maradona's better than Messi. You know, he's accountable at the end of the day, too. I mean, he's on the field. We can't say that he hasn't done enough because he's tried to carry this team. But, you know, it's still amazing to me because I think we've seen this team fraying over the last couple of years. I mean, we had the Roma result. We had the Liverpool result. This team under pressure without the ball has looked very suspect. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. The thing is, Barcelona fans, at everyone around Barcelona, even journalists, still expect Messi to appear when things aren't working well. He has kept this asset to him, even if he's 33 right now, and in several games, as the ones you said, for example, Rome, Liverpool, Bayern Munich. Once things have gone down for Barcelona, for example, you have this picture that has become viral these last days of Barcelona dressing room at halftime in Lisbon, in Estadio La Luz, with Lionel Messi. Absolutely broken down, head down. You expect a different attitude from a leader, and yeah, then this translates on the field. Messi, I think he had an opportunity in the. I remember he had an opportunity in the second half, but apart from that swinging cross in the first half that hit the post and a shot in the second half, he did nothing else. Anything else? So it's an interesting debate also because there's still this sensation that Messi can resolve difficult situations, but in these key matches, Messi has not delivered the best of his performance. It's interesting because maybe here's the sign of the first real sign of a decline by Lionel Messi. Even so, I think for all his experience, for all he has done with Barcelona, As I said before, he can teach still many things to the players that have to come in the near future.
We're talking to Jordi Sunyer, TV3 in Barcelona, Spain. Remarkable stuff here. I want to get into La Masia because there are younger players, Alex Collado, Carlos Alenia, Francisco Trincao. There's a number. Is La Masia broken, and are there good enough young players coming through? We even have a U.S. Player on the Barcelona B team, Conrad De La Fuente. Is there enough coming through that could help the first team? And is La Masia as broken as people are saying it, which is, for my listeners, the academy that produces players for the first team?
Well, La Masia is not in its best moments, let's say that. But fortunately, there's a good generation of players coming through the youth ranks. Let me point that Francisco Trincao, the Portuguese player, is not a La Masia product because he has been bought this year from Sporting Braga. So it's signed from abroad. He's not a La Masia product. But you have Ricky Puig in the first team already. You have Ansu Fati. And you have good players in the B team. We spoke last time we met about Conrad De La Fuente. Good player with good qualities with the ball. Quick player. He has shown many interesting things with Barça B team. Even if B team couldn't get promotion to the second division, they lost the playoff final against another Catalan team, Sabadell. But you have, for example, all these players that have been brought to the first team to fill in the bench this last weeks in this COVID period. For example, the one I like the most is Monchu. Typical Barca midfielder with a plus of strength. He's not Ricky Puig. He's the same size as Ricky Puig, 1.70 meters. But he has this capability of playing as a holding midfielder. He works a lot. He has a great work rate. He's not a fantasy player. This would give a balance to the midfield. And I think it's a very interesting player for the first team. He's a player for the first team. But what happens with all these players? With Roland Araujo, for example, the Uruguayan defender, or even Alex Collado, as you said, Barca needs to sell. We have heard these days that many teams know about the qualities of these players and are eager to buy them. And Barcelona needs money. Even they are thinking of selling these players for, let's say, 5, 6, 7 million euros with an option to rebuy these players if they perform well at their future clubs. But that's not the solution. You have now, I think, to rely on these players. These are not the players you have to sell. There's a good generation, of course. But then, is La Masia broken? The results of the youth teams have not been good these last years. And Barcelona are signing many players from outside La Masia, even in levels like, let's say, the juvenile team. Juvenile team is 16, 17, 18 years old. Signing Dutch players like Xavi Mbuyamba, Brazilian players like Igor Gomez, then signing many Brazilian players for the B team, players who are not fulfilling the standard of play even at the Spanish third tier. You can't do that in La Masia. La Masia is world famous for breeding the talent from an early age, since the player is 10, 11, 12. This is not like La Masia used to do. That's the first thing to rebuild in this new era that Barcelona has to begin. The thing is, how can you expect that the same people that have run everything down, the club and particularly La Masia, to be the ones, I mean, President Bartomeu over everyone, to rebuild the whole the club? That's difficult to understand, but they think they can do that. So we'll expect.
Last one for you, Jordi, before I go. Bartomeu, when would be the next time he could be removed via election with the board?
According to FC Barcelona's statutes, he could have resigned this week after Bayern Munich defeated.
And accepted some responsibility, but okay.
yeah, that's it. But he preferred not to do that. He could resign and call for elections. But I think that if he had called for elections right now and the whole board, or at least the majority of the board, resigned, because to call for elections right now, it's not only Bartomeu that has to resign. It's Bartomeu plus half of the board. So it's not that easy. But if they resign and call for elections right now, it's very likely then that the new president of Barcelona would have been, again, Joan Laporta. He's very popular. Many Barcelona fans remember that Pep Guardiola's team, the best years in Barcelona history were under Joan Laporta as president, Cruyffist Orthodox, Catalan nationalist in favor of Catalan independence. You know, that strikes a chord with many, many, many Barcelona fans. And he's still a popular figure, but that's opposed to the feelings, the philosophy of the actual board. So if they not resign, simply they have followed the statutes of FC Barcelona. If you call for elections because your time at the club is finished, it was 6 years, this will be the sixth season of this board running Barcelona, you have to call for elections from March the 15th to June the 15th, the 15th of your last season in charge. And that's what they've done. You could say, okay, they have brought forward the election because they will hold the election on the week of March the 15th. Okay, but they haven't done anything extraordinary. That's what it's written in Barcelona law. So it's not they haven't resigned. They haven't done anything to accept responsibility of everything what's happening in Barcelona.
Unbelievable, because it just seems in sports it's always the coach who goes, and it's never the sporting director, and it's usually not the president. So it's amazing.
That's Jordy, ironic, isn't it?
It's really ironic.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable. Jordy, you're the best. Thank you for coming on. My listeners got a real treat here tonight with you coming on. So did I. So thank you, Jordy. We appreciate it. The great, great stuff on Barcelona, and we look forward to your next visit on the show.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me again on the show, Glenn.
All right. That's the great Jordy Sunyer, TV3 in Barcelona. And, I mean, you don't get it any better than that.
Well, that's our Lustau Vermouth La Liga update. By the way, we did that interview very early this morning because of the time change. Very quickly after that, guess who was relieved of his job? Eric Abidal. And Jordy sent me a text. He goes, "You're not going to believe it. Eric Abidal has been relieved of his job." So fascinating stuff from him. Only you could get that from somebody that's on the ground, who's covering that team daily, who's in and around it. Fantastic stuff from Jordy Sunyer. All right, we're going to close it up tonight. When we come back, Diego Bocanegra, U of H women's coach, shining the light on the Cougars a bit, and also shining a light on what they hope is going to be a women's college season. We'll take a break. John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm presenting Soccer Matters.
At ESPN 97.5, we wear Boomer Naturals masks because they have three-layer nano silver protection. Order now at BoomerNaturals.com and use promo code ESPN Houston for 20% off.
Hi, this is Adam Lundquist from the Houston Dynamo, and thank you for listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis.
All right, today we wrap it up on Soccer Matters here with a couple of things. First, we got to remind you that Nebo Bandovich, the former Houston hotshot, well, real estate agents, are you tired of paying high commission splits to your broker? At NB Elite Realty, you get 100% of your hard-earned commission at closing. Plus, they offer low transaction fees, free investment training, exceptional support, and there are no hidden fees. Visit the website, nbeliterealty.com, or call 844-444-NBER for more information on how to join the winning team. Don't wait. Start your journey to financial freedom today with NB Elite Realty, nbeliterealty.com. That's Nebo Bandovich, a friend of mine and the former Houston hotshot goal-scoring machine over at the Summit. Speaking of Houston, we stay in Houston to finish the show off tonight. And tonight we're very pleased to have Diego Bocanegra. He is the head coach of the U of H women's team that are preparing for their season. Diego, thank you very much for coming on the show. This is long overdue, by the way.
Yeah, thanks, Glenn. I know we've chatted a little bit and happy to finally be here.
Yeah, it's good to be here. All right, so look, I mean, all you college coaches, and we're going to get right into it, you got a lot of challenges. You guys have been training now. You're going into your third week. How has it been going, and how challenging has it been for you, Diego?
Yeah, this has definitely been a difficult year, and the simple fact that the rules change almost on a daily basis. We've had so many different times where, okay, you can do this, you can't do that. You know, we feel like we have a very safe environment, but this is the longest any of our players have been off in their lives. You know, we got shut down in early March, and we haven't had the group from March till July when they came back and started doing really just fitness with our strength and conditioning staff. And then for the last 2.5 weeks, we've had to bounce back and forth from socially distanced practices to, you know, we only get to do contact a couple days a week, and those are usually the days right after we've taken COVID testing, and we know that everybody's tested negative. So it's been a challenge, but I'd rather have this challenge than not even have the chance.
Diego Bocanegra joining us, U of H women's coach, and a number of local Houston players on the team as well. We're going to get into that in a minute, but let's just talk about your conference and kind of what's going on, because we all know that different conferences are doing different things, and some are playing, some aren't. What's going on with U of H?
Yeah, around the country, obviously, you've seen people, the conferences, postponing till the spring. Currently, the American Athletic Conference, we are moving forward. We feel that we have the resources and the ability to properly provide a safe environment for our student athletes with our testing protocol, with all of the parameters we have in place. And so our conference is moving forward at this time. We are set to start our conference slate September 6th, and we had a modified conference schedule where we will just play games once a week every Sunday with 9 teams in the conference. That'll be a 9-week season. Every team will get a bye week, 4 home games, 4 away games. And then we have the ability to sprinkle in some midweek non-conference games if they follow the guidelines, where it's drivable, no overnight stays. Everyone has to have the same testing protocol. So, for example, we open our season September 1st against Houston Baptist, which meets all those requirements, are right down the road, and gives us both a good chance to get on the field. So we're excited for September 1st to come along.
All right, so after I listened to you say that, I'm thinking there's a silver lining here, because we always complain about how condensed the college season is. If you're having one game a week, this may afford you, and correct me if I'm wrong, the ability to really be able to do more in-depth coaching.
Absolutely. I mean, I think we believe, as a soccer community, this is how the game's supposed to be played. You look at all the professional levels, they're playing every Sunday, and then with every now and then the midweek game, you know, for example, in Europe, it might have a Europa game or a Champions League game, and how our season is currently set up, that's exactly how it is. We're going to play every Sunday, and then on some weeks we'll have a Tuesday, a Wednesday, or a Thursday game, but no more than 2 games in a week, and really we don't have more than 6 games in a month. It's actually exciting. I'm bummed that we're losing games, but yeah, we get to have a proper season, and I hope we can use this data that we get from this year to show the NCAA this is in the best interest for our players' safety and health, and just prolong the season so that this is how it's always set up. Absolutely silver lining. I'm excited.
Diego Bocanegra joining us, head coach of U of H. Yeah, because before it was just basically, look, you know, you played on a Thursday or a Friday and a Sunday, and it's like rest, recovery, play, rest, you know, recovery, play. I mean, now you can maybe get into really deep topics with your players.
Absolutely. I think our scouting reports will be better. Our game plans will be more in depth. You said it. Before it was, all right, manage. Once you start playing games, first of all, it's a short preseason, and then you start playing games. Aside from the occasional bye week, It is. It's play, rest, recover, maybe get one training session a week where you're actually teaching, coaching, and working on anything. Where now you can set it up like a proper week where you get some proper training sessions at the beginning of the week. You can focus a game plan. You can tweak your tactics. Our players and the coaching staff, we're really looking forward to it because we get to go in depth like never before.
Now, I've had a lot of discussion with Sasha Sarovsky of Maryland and the splits, you know, two semester schedules. Is that something on the women's side that's being pursued as much?
You know, I think the men are taking the lead on that. The women's side in general didn't have as much of a drive. There's a lot of us that would love to do that and play a year-round schedule. But I don't think there's a drive. I think more on the women's side was kind of a compromise where can we just extend our fall season maybe by 3 weeks or a month so that we're having maybe one game this week and two the next week, one game. And so at least we're alternating. We're not playing two games on a weekend. So every other week we're getting a proper training week. So either way, I think this extended time is how it should be, whether we move this way or fully what the men are pursuing. I think something's got to change, and I'm hopeful for that, that this is bringing, you know, this pandemic has brought around change around the world. Well, let's hopefully we get some positive change that works for us as well.
All right. Speaking of that pandemic, and we're talking to Diego Bocanegra, the head coach of the U of H women's soccer team, and it's good to finally get you on here. How are your ladies handling it all? Because, you know, I look at you as a coach. I'm looking at the MLS coaches, coaches in the Bundesliga, the Champions League. I mean, the amount of protocol is ridiculous. And the amount of focus and energy that takes just to maintain the protocol, I'm just curious how the ladies are handling.
No, I could not be more proud of our team. I'll be honest, I was really nervous. We have a core group of veterans that they've been in the system for a while, and they know what the expectations are. But this happens to be the year where I have the first recruiting class that I've recruited from start to finish. So we're bringing in 14 players, 14 freshmen in the dorms. That's a scary thought in a year like this. And we've had some, I don't even want to say close calls, but we've had to have some time where the veterans and the coaching staff, we've talked to them. This is acceptable. This is not. In a normal year, you going out and meeting up with your boyfriend or group of girlfriends wouldn't be a big deal, but we can't do it in this year. We had some of those talks early on, and I think for the most part, everybody's bought in. They're, at this point, they're all just so excited that we're one of the few conferences still playing, and they realize what an opportunity that they have, and they want to do everything in their power to control that opportunity. And so I've been proud of them. It is difficult. I mean, they pretty much get to hang out with each other, and that's about it, and that can be challenging. So this week will be really telling when the rest of the student population comes back. They're really going to have to be disciplined at that point in time.
Go to uhcougars.com. That's where you can get information on the University of Houston women's soccer team. It's headed up by Diego Bocanegra, and he joins us tonight. We're happy to have him on the show. Pick a couple players out that are kind of focal points of this team that the city of Houston should know about, and my listeners should know about.
Absolutely. I'm going to go ahead and start with Jasmine Grant. She's from the Houston area. She's going into her senior year. She was on the all-freshman team as a freshman, been battling some injuries over the last couple of years, played for Jamaica's U20 national team. I look for her to have a breakout season. In our shortened spring, I think she had 4 goals and 4 assists in the 2 games that we played. So if she's healthy and going, I think she could be huge for us. At our 10 and central mid, Mia Brasha going into her senior year as well, kind of pulling the strings. She's been a focal point for this group. And then I think our back line, we returned 3 of our back 4. Cassidy Formanek and is one at the heart of our defense that she's our grit. She's our determination back there. She holds it together. Emma Clark is kind of the coach on the field. She's our New Zealand international, 5'11", towering center back with magical feet. She can play out of the back. And then to her right, Amy Nguyen, also from the Houston area. She's an Oklahoma State transfer. She'll be finishing here with us. She's been with us for about 2.5 years now. But I think having that solid back line of two juniors and a senior, plus the spine of our attacking center mid and one of our forwards, I think that group, plus some other ones that I haven't mentioned, are kind of the ones that have established themselves so far. But from what I've seen in the last two and a half weeks, I think there's a few more players that are going to have some breakout seasons that we'll be talking about them in the future.
Diego Bocanegra joining us, the head coach of the U of H women's soccer team. And have you struck up a good rivalry with the Rices and the HBUs? You know, because just geographically you're thinking, you know, there could be some fun stuff that goes on.
Absolutely. You know, I had a good relationship with Nikki before she left Rice, and now I have a good relationship with Brian that he's there. We're 4 miles apart, our campuses, and it makes sense for two good programs from two conferences to play each other. So we're on each other's schedule every year. Same thing with Houston Baptist, Sam Houston, Lamar, what Steve Holman over at Lamar has done. He's done a fantastic job. Yeah. And so we look to get them on the schedule every year. But just the amount of quality games that we can get in the Houston area itself, yeah, it's fun for our team. We want to play against the teams that are in our neighborhood, and it becomes a fun rivalry.
And the other thing is, obviously, I mean, as you found out once you moved here, that the Houston area is a real hotbed for women's talent.
Absolutely. I mean, I would say at any given time, probably 40% of our roster is from Texas, with about half of that from the Houston area. We recruit nationally and even around the world, but we want to keep our best Houstonians home. There is a lot of talent here between all the local clubs, and so we make it a priority to try to keep the best few local players in town, and hopefully not at those other schools I mentioned, hopefully coming to us. But I've enjoyed it here, absolutely.
So you and I were talking before we got into this interview about how much we've been enjoying the once-a-day sort of single elimination Champions League and Europa League, and you told me, you just said, man, I'm a soccer junkie.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the NWSL Challenge Cup, it was great. You know, we got a morning game and an evening game throughout the group stage. And then with the knockout stages, it was fun between all the Champions League. MLS is back. It's almost felt like an Olympic or a World Cup year, where you get this extended soccer throughout the summer that you normally don't get. Usually fall kicks up and we're ready for all the leagues to get going. But this summer, because of the way everything worked out, that's been kind of a silver lining and a blessing. And, you know, I want to throw a shout out to the Houston Dash. I'm so proud of that that group of women and James and Twyla and the rest of the coaching staff for bringing home the cup. What a great way to represent for the city. And I'm just proud of them and that group.
And you've worked with them before. So what would it mean if your program ultimately moved the player to the Houston Dash? That would be a really symbolic, great moment. And the other thing is, you're fortunate to have a college program in a city where there's an NWSL team.
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal. We sent some players on from this program, playing at the professional ranks. We've had a few go overseas. We have one currently playing in Argentina, Natalie Juncos. And she represented Argentina this past World Cup. But to have somebody from this program get drafted in the NWSL and even get picked up by the Houston Dash, that would be fantastic. You know, in my short time with the Dash, there were some players that I coached collegiately. Currently, Katie Naughton, center back there. I got to work with her when we were both at Notre Dame. Carrie Ricaro, former Houston Dash player, also was one of Katie's teammates at Notre Dame. And then just the soccer community is so small. So I enjoyed my time there with them, and I'd love nothing more to send a player or two their way and let them keep going and representing the city.
And Katie Naughton and Megan Oyster are a big part of the turnaround
for the NWSL Challenge Cup winner, Houston Dash. Diego, thank you very much for coming on tonight. Looking forward to seeing your team play in this upcoming season. And thank you very much for spending this time with us and giving us some great insight into your program.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Glenn. Appreciate it.
All right. That's Diego Bocanegra. He's the head coach of the U of H women's team. You can go to uhcougars.com, find more information out on Diego and the program. And if you're a female playing in the Houston area, I mean, what a great opportunity to be able to play in your hometown. That'll do it for tonight here on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5. Big thank you to our presenting sponsor, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. You get in an accident, we don't want you to. Car, boat, motorcycle, call the Daspit Law Firm. 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. They'll bring you a personalized approach. They'll work for you 24-7 nights and weekends. John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. And they're the reason we get on the radio and have this great soccer talk and can visit with people like Diego Bocanegra of U of H. So keep that in mind. Big thank you also to everybody behind the scenes, Victor Ariza, and also Tyler Scott and Aaron Raybould. That'll do it for tonight. Until next Tuesday at 7 o'clock Central Time, I'm Glenn Davis.
ESPN 97.5.
Hey, soccer fans.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At BP, we're not just talking strategy. We're making it happen. Growing our upstream business with 6 major new projects in 2025. 4 already live. 2 more scheduled this year. Expecting to add 135,000 barrels a day to peak production, helping drive long-term shareholder value. For more on our growth plans, visit bp.com/strategy at work.